Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today in digest format, World Radio Magazine Online for May 2010. World Radio is published by CQ Communications, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The telephone number is 516-681-2922. This recording is a production of the Courage Hand Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. Our website, a very fine job every single day of the year, www.handyham.org. Let's begin today with the World Radio Online Newsfront. Three radio amateurs and a club to be honored at the Dayton Hamvention. Three amateur radio operators who have made significant contributions to the amateur radio service will be honored guests when the Dayton Hamvention 2010 opens in Hara Arena on May 14 in Dayton, Ohio. In addition, the Club of the Year will be honored in keeping with the 2010 convention's theme, which is Amateur Radio Clubs Worldwide, the Lifeline. Recipients of this year's Hamvention Awards are, for special achievement, Dick Ross, call K2MGA, for his excellent work over the past number of years on CQ Magazine. Officials said in a news release, Dick has worked for CQ Communications for 50 years. Now, as publisher, he oversees four magazines. They are CQ, CQ VHF, Popular Communications, and, of course, what you're listening to, World Radio Online, the CQ Book and Video Library, and an extensive award and contest program. Now, for technical excellence, Simon Brown, call HB9DRV for the invention and development of Ham Radio Deluxe. For the Amateur of the Year, Jim Stafford, called W4QO, for 50 years of service to amateur radio and his support for public service and unending efforts to recruit and develop hams of all ages. And lastly, of course, the Club of the Year, North Fulton Amateur Radio League, NFARL, in North Fulton, Georgia, serving the greater Atlanta area, the state of Georgia, and the United States with the emergency services training and the preparation of amateur radio in general. Choosing the finalists was a difficult process due to the number of fine nominations, said Frank Bayford, chairman of the awards committee. This year, an additional award category was added, Club of the Year. This award honors a ham radio organization that contributes to the good of amateur radio. Although we narrowed our club choices to North Fulton, Georgia, we had a number of deserving candidates, Bayford said. The winner of this year's award is certainly a great example of the thousands of clubs and organizations around the world perpetuating our avocation. A dinner is planned to honor the 2010 Hamvention Award winners. Our next news front piece, woo, AO51. As a close encounter of the scary kind. In the wee hours of March 1st, a data-gathering microsatellite had, quoting, a potentially dangerous encounter, close quote, with the AMSAT OSCA 51 amateur radio satellite about 500 miles above the Earth's surface, according to a report from the ARRL. We were all relieved that AO51 is a okay, AMSAT North America Vice President of Operations Drew Glassbrenner, KO4MA, said. But it reinforces how tenuous our satellite presence is and the fact that we should be constantly working and fundraising to build and launch new satellites. An alert of the close approach of the Crosspan FM repeater amateur satellite with Formosat-3D was sent by the U.S. Joint Space Operations Center. The 3D is part of a constellation of 6 remote sensing microsatellites that collect atmospheric data for weather prediction and for ionosphere, climate, and gravity research, the report said. The estimate was that they would come within 2,900 feet overall, but only 130 feet radially, Glass Brenner said. I'm visualizing that scenario as one car merging on a highway at 17,500 miles per hour with another car 2,900 feet in front at 130 feet to the left or right. Scale the 17,500 miles per hour to 70 miles per hour, and that distance in the analogy would be 12 feet in front and 6 inches abreast, just to put the velocity and distances in perspective. Close call, I guess, huh? That was filed by the American Radio Relay League, the AARL. Here's a tidbit about a young lady amateur radio operator. It's titled Project Runway Designer Joins AARLPR Committee. A fashion designer and TV personality, also known for her amateur radio articles and videos for Make, that's spelled M-A-K-E, magazine, has become a member of the American Radio Relay League's Public Relations Committee. Ayanna Ng, spelled E-N-G, called KC2UHB, who appeared in the Bravo reality series Project Runway, writes on her website she's, quoting, very excited to join the committee because I want to help connect the maker-hacker community to the ham community. It's a hip to tinker. Ham radio operators were the original makers and hackers, she writes. And I feel like makers and hackers could learn a lot from an organization where members are building their own portable devices that can send messages or remote control other devices around the world and through outer space. That was filed by World Radio Online. From Chile, operators take MCOM role after Chilean quake. Radio amateurs in Chile quickly sprang into action, initially on VHF, very high frequency, then on high frequency net frequencies, after an 8.8 magnitude earthquake rocked the nation February 27, according to Radio Club de Chile. President Dr. Galdino Basomi called KE3PG. At the same time, operators in Hawaii were activated on reports of a possible tsunami. Speaking by telephone March 1 with IARU Region 2 President Renaud de Lendreau, YV5AMH, Dr. Bensomi said an emergency net was immediately activated across Chile and that Radio Club de Chile members were actively working in close coordination with civil and military authorities. Also, that requests regarding health and welfare news about people in the affected areas is one of the main activities occupying the Chilean radio amateurs these days, according to a report on Amateur Radio Newsline. We thank them for that. The earthquake triggered a tsunami alert from the west coast of North and South America to as far away as New Zealand, Australia, and the nations of the Pacific Rim. Some 60 Hawaiian hams participated in the tsunami radio net that operated throughout the island state. More than 24 real-time reports from observers around Hawaii were relayed simultaneously to the State Emergency Operating Center and the 4-county EOCs. That's by AR Newsline. Well, our friends at the FCC are working also. FCC gathers comments on AHA wafer request. The Federal Communications Commission in March issued a public notice seeking comments about whether it, quoting, should grant the American Hospital Association's request for a blanket waiver to permit amateur operators who are hospital employees to participate in emergency drills that are conducted by hospitals for accreditation purposes and that are not government-sponsored, according to the AARL. Section 97.113, sub A, sub 3 of the Commission's rules specifically prohibits amateur stations from transmitting communications, quoting, in which the station licensee or control operator has a pecuniary interest, including communications on behalf of an employer, close quote. That's from the rules, folks. The FCC set April 2 as the deadline for comments. In February, the American Hospital Association filed a request with the Federal Communications Commission for a blanket waiver, quoting, to permit hospitals seeking accreditation to use amateur radio operators who are hospital employees to transmit communications on behalf of the hospital as part of emergency preparedness drills, close quote. That came from the ARRL letter. And, of course, the FCC is yet to make a final determination on that. For some of you folks throughout the country and the world who listen to this material on the Massachusetts Reading Network, the Talking Information Center, or from the Courage Handy Ham System in Golden Valley, Minnesota, will be interested in this, perhaps. An amateur radio company, Alignco, Alignco Sales and Service shifts to GRE Incorporated. GRE Incorporated and Alignco Incorporated have announced a marketing agreement in which GRE, those its letters, an acronym, GRE America, will distribute, offer customer service, and provide warranty and non-warranty repair for radios and amplification equipment under the Alignco brand for all of North America, according to a report on Amateur Radio Newsline. Alignco manufactures a wide range of products for the radio amateur. Under the agreement, GRE Inc. will be the executive distributor of Alignco products in Canada, the United States of America, and Mexico, and will handle all warranty service and parts orders, the report said. GRE will also provide out-of-warranty service, as will other currently authorized Alignco service centers. We thank both AR Newsline and GRE for that submission of information about the change in the Alignco situation. Well, I guess it's time now for the editor's log here on World Radio Online for May 2010. The editor's log is filed by the editor himself, Richard Fisher, called KI6SN. Titled, Finally, It's On to Dayton. For the first time in more than 45 years as an amateur radio operator, it's springtime and I'm not wishing I could be going to the Dayton Hamvention. Looks like this year I'll actually make it. Dreams do come true. World Radio Online will be part of a contingent data booth in the main area along with CQ Amateur Radio, CQ VHF, and Popular Communications Magazines, all publications of CQ Communications Incorporated. What a thrill. Things kick off on Friday and wrap up on Sunday, May 14 through 16. I can hardly wait. Somehow over the last 4.5 decades, work, family commitments, or a dwindling bank account have managed to get in the way of May pilgrimage to Ohio. But not in 2010. I can't remember having this kind of anticipation since waiting for the mailman to deliver my novice ticket in 1965. If you're attending the Hamvention, please stop by and say hello. It's important for us to get to know our readers, and I can't think of a better way than having an eyeball CUSO on the floor of Hara Arena. Meantime, if you're not able to attend, we invite you to scroll to page 8. Remember, this is an online edition of this edition where you'll find a link to streaming video from the Hamvention provided to us by Tom Medlin called K5KUP. During convention weekend, click on the image and you'll be whisked away to Dayton, albeit virtually. Please fasten your seatbelt just the same. Speaking of interaction, we're really thankful to be able to host a live monthly chat with readers through the World Radio Online blog at www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. This time, it'll be Sunday, May 2 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Please mark your calendar and join the conversation, of course, online. Our first session was in early April, and radio amateurs from around the country and the world were invited to take part. It's your chance to let us know what you think about the magazine, topics you'd like to see covered, and to give us suggestions for the ways to make WRO more useful to you. You'll also be able to see what others have to say. If you missed April's session, Here's how the monthly chats work. Go to the World Radio Online blog, where you'll see the Cover It Live box. That's a prompt, our portal to the real-time chat. When a session goes live, type in your question, comment, or suggestion, submit it, and it will appear in a chat box for everyone to see. I'll comment, and you'll be able to comment on others' postings as well. Sure hope to see you there. Changing the pace of the comments here on Editor's Log, remembering Pete Hoover, call W6ZH, Whiskey 6 Zulu Hotel. The obituaries for Herbert Pete Hoover III, W6ZH, who became a silent key in February, he passed on, paint a picture of a dedicated radio amateur who distinguished himself in so many ways. True, the late grandson of the 31st United States President held positions on a local level with the Pasadena, California Radio and Southern California DX clubs. Nationally, he served in several capacities with the American Radio Relay League internationally. Pete worked tirelessly with the American Red Cross, Looking into Space, W6ZH, along with IMAX Bill Itell, W6UF, also a silent key, set up a fund matching program to encourage contributions to amateur satellite programs. But I remember Pete as a guy whose boyish enthusiasm and dry wit brought a smile every time I was around him. We first met on field day many years ago, sitting at a picnic table in the mountains north of Los Angeles. He gave me a blow-by-blow description of the antenna tuner he'd been building. It was pure poetry. We stayed in touch ever since. Pete was an avid home brewer, a meticulous craftsman, and a top-notch radio operator, often at low-power QRP levels. I'll remember our many radio contacts and miss the sound of W6ZH's superb fist, one I came to know, appreciate, and envy. Pete Hoover, call W6ZH, silent key. The editor's log is signed by the editor, Richard Fisher, KI6SN. Before I go much further, I think it's time to give you a little bit of a look into the hamfests and special events for the month of May and the beginning part of June 2010. I'll begin with the state of Massachusetts, W1ACT, Slant P, Team Ham Cow, Slant Fall River Amateur Radio Club, Martha's Vineyard Island at the Gayhead Lighthouse, which is IOTA NA046 USI MA005S NEQP. The time, 2000 Zulu, May 1st through 0500 Zulu, May 2nd. 1300 Zulu through 2000 Zulu, May 2nd on CW. The frequencies are listed here, but they are multiple in all of the different sections of the amateur radio band, both on the voice portion and also on the Morse code portion, which is CW. If you're fortunate enough to make a contact, you can QSL via N1JOY, November 1, Juliet, Oscar, Yankee. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope. You can check it out on the website at hamcow.com. hamcow.net, or you can email n1joy@arrl.net and discuss it that way. And just as an aside, I'm particularly pleased to see this and give this announcement because I'm only about 10 miles from Fall River. I'm in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. We're actually neighbors. And Martha's Vineyard Island, as I look to the northeast on a bright day, is only 7 miles over on the horizon. And it's a great fun to chase the lighthouse setups throughout the country and the world. It's very popular around Massachusetts. A couple of hams in this area, particularly not just N1JOY, are constantly going out and putting different lighthouses on the air for the amateur radio worldwide community. As an amateur radio operator, it's great fun to try to pick them up in the log, as we call it. Now we're going to hopscotch right across to the other side of this great country, to California, the Valley of the Moon Amateur Radio Club. Their call is W6AJF. It's holding the ARRL Hamfest on Saturday, May 1st, 8 a.m. to noon at the Sonoma Valley Veterans Memorial Building, 126 First Street West, Sonoma, California. That's one block north of Central Sonoma Plaza. The admission is free. There are going to be walk-in VE examination sessions if you'd like to become an amateur radio operator. Then there's swaps inside and all kinds of tables and breakfast for $6. So make a point of trying to go to the Valley of the Moon Amateur Radio Club on May 1st, Sonoma Valley Veterans Memorial Building. Another one in Michigan, Wexauke Amateur Radio Club's 48th annual Cadillac Swap, Saturday, May the 1st at the Cadillac Junior High School, 500 Chestnut Street in Cadillac, Michigan. The admission is $5. Tables can be had for $10. The talk-in is on 2 meters, 146.98, and there's no PL. Commercial vendors, VE sessions, information, reservations, and all are there for you to work with. The State of New York Special Event Station, K2BSA Slant 2, Kilo 2, Boy Scouts America, Slant 2. Sponsored by Chenango Valley Amateur Radio Association, Unadilla, New York. That starts at 10 a.m. on May the 14th, 2010, Eastern Daylight Time, and concludes at 4 p.m. May the 16th, 2010. Boy Scout Troop 1 is celebrating 100 years of unbroken charter with the Boy Scouts of America, the only Troop 1 in the United States who have accomplished this. So, listen up to K2BSA Slant 2 by the Chenango Valley Amateur Radio Association, Unadilla, New York, May 14 through 16. And one more here in May, South Carolina, the Blue Ridge Amateur Radio Society's 48th Annual Ham Fest, Saturday, May 1st at the Piedmont Interstate Fairgrounds, Spartanburg, South Carolina. They're expecting between 700 to 900 participants to show up, so that'll be a nice crowd. For more information on that, you can go to www.upstatehamfest.com. All one word, upstatehamfest.com. Now, just looking a little further ahead into June, happens to be back to California first, the special call N6R, November 6, Romeo, 1800 Zulu, June 25 to 1800 Zulu, June 27, commemorating the late President Ronald Reagan and Mrs. Nancy Reagan, grounds of the President Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum in Simi Valley, California. We have to give credit here to various amateur radio clubs in the California area around the Simi Valley. They are the Ventura County Amateur Radio Society, also the Simi Settlers ARC, and the Ventura County ARC, as well as the Conejo Valley ARC. They'll be on the various frequencies. If you want a QSL, you have to send the special self-addressed stamped envelope to VCARS, care of Peter Hines, H-E-I-N-S, call N6ZE, 1559 Norwich Avenue, Thousand Oaks, California, 91360. State of Pennsylvania, in June, the Breeze Shooters Hamfest 2010 and Computer Show, Sunday, June the 6th. That'll be at the Butler Farm Showgrounds in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And lastly, Tennessee, the Knoxville Hamfest and Electronics Exposition is Saturday, June the 12th in Kerbella Temple, Knoxville, Tennessee. Our first major piece is with the Handy Hams. It's titled, Raising Our Numbers and Profile While Recognizing a Volunteer, Honored by President Obama. The submitting author is Patrick Tice, W-A-0-T-D-A. If there is any theme that runs through publicity about amateur radio these days, it is generally one about the reliability of our communications in an emergency situation. In story after story I see posted by Google News, hams tell the press and the public about the way amateur radio operators can stay on the air to provide vital communications when cellular phones are overloaded or down, and other communications infrastructure has failed. The training and volunteerism of amateur radio operators are highlighted in these articles, too. The very best includes some human factor. A volunteer operator who has helped the community, a team of operators who have worked in tandem with emergency personnel to provide backup communications, and sometimes even a victim who owes a debt of gratitude to amateur radio. These are themes that the American Radio Relay League, the ARRL, has taken a leadership role in promoting, and evidence shows the strategy has worked. More new hams than ever joined the ranks of amateur radio in the United States last year. According to a story on ARRL's website, quoting here, a total of 30,144 new licenses were granted in 2009, an increase of almost 7.5% from 2008. In the year 2005, 16,368 new hams joined amateur radio's ranks. Just 5 years later, that number has increased by almost 14,000, a whopping 84%. The ARRL Volunteer Examiner Committee, the VEC, is one of 14 VECs who administer amateur radio license exams. Of the many reasons people become interested in amateur radio, the one I have heard most often in recent years is that new hams want to earn a license so they will have the means to help in emergencies and to be of service to the community. Countering the erroneous image of ham radio as an outdated technology that's all but replaced by the internet, the ARRL answers that question of why we are relevant in the 21st century on its WordPress, We Do That Radio, and emergency radio websites. With all of that in mind, we turn to the large cardboard envelope I received from Matt Arthur, call KA0PQW, of Ellendale, Minnesota recently. Matt had told me he was sending me an article, but I was surprised and delighted to see that it read, "Honored by President Obama, Local Ham Radio Hobbyists Recognized." The story appeared in the February 18 edition of the New Richmond, Minnesota Star Eagle newspaper and featured a photo of Matt in his well-equipped ham shack. In the article, staff writer Jody Windermere explained that when a letter arrived from the White House, Matt had learned that he had been selected to be honored. Quoting, "Congratulations on receiving the President's Volunteer Service Award, and thank you for helping to address the most pressing needs in your community and our country." Close quote. The letter began. Matt was recognized for his work with the Community Emergency Response Team in Steele County, Minnesota. He recalled how he volunteered and handled communications during a deadly flood in 2007. It had been 9 hours until the National Guard could relieve him. In the meantime, he handled traffic in and out of the flood zone, passing messages to authorities in Winona, Minnesota. As anyone familiar with the geography of southeastern Minnesota knows, the hills and valleys make cellular phone communications problematic. Those of us who know Matt as a handy ham leader and volunteer understand what a great spokesman he is for amateur radio. Being blind has not slowed him down. In fact, as a handy ham member and volunteer, Matt uses his knowledge of blind adaptations in amateur radio to help others learn they do not need to see to operate the equipment. To paraphrase a familiar saying about politics, all good ham radio work is local. At least that's how it begins. Local ham radio classes, local sky-worn training, local ARIS exercises, local club meetings and programs, and local news stories, just like the one that features Matt. Of course, ham radio is worldwide by its nature, but getting the word out about the things we can do really does begin right at home. Congratulations to KA0PQW on this wonderful honor. You can contact the Handy Hams at Courage Center Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422, or call toll-free 1-866-426-3442. For email, lowercase, ham radio, that's one word, HAMRADIO, at couragecenter.org. Courage Center is also one word, CourageCenter.org. So the email, hamradio@couragecenter.org. And the Courage and Ham Systems website is www.handyham.org. And we certainly thank Pat Tice, called WA0TDA, the Courage Handy Ham System Director, for this acknowledgement of Matt Arthur, KA0PQW. And folks, here I'll add another little bit of commentary of my own. Several years ago, the director, Pat Tice, invited me to be an instructor at their training session that particular year in Malibu, California. When I arrived there, it was time to set up the campgrounds for the people that would be coming from all over the country who had received an invitation from the Courage Hand-to-Ham System to participate and to be taught amateur radio at the basic introductory levels. And I got paired up with Matt Arthur, good old Matt, KA0PQW. And I was absolutely astonished at the ability of this young man. He was a lot younger then. This has been about 6 years, I think. Hi. And I was overwhelmed by his ability to work with radio equipment. And you have to remember, he is totally blind. Everything is tactile with him, and a lot of experience in putting together and taking things apart, basically with feel. But I'll always cherish that week with the Courage Hand-to-Ham System training session in Malibu, California. And certainly I congratulate Matt Arthur myself, a very fine gentleman. Well, I think it's time to look in the classroom. Reaching kids through inspiring technology programs. The author here is Carol Perry, called WB2MGP. As many of my readers already know, since I've retired from teaching Introduction to Amateur Radio at Intermediate School 72 in Staten Island, New York, I've headed up the Education Committee of the Radio Club of America. Our goal is to support radio slant technology classes in high schools and middle schools across the country. With the support of this nonprofit organization, I've visited many schools nationwide and helped to establish, and in some cases duplicate, programs like mine. In December 2009, I visited with Robert Pulley's technology classes at Lantana Community Middle School in Lantana, Florida. Several teachers told me about this wonderful program where youngsters, many of whom are underprivileged, made major strides and accomplishments in Mr. Pauly's classes. There are no pens or pencils. Everything is digital. The teaching curriculum, the grade book, are 100% online. Students research and learn about technology, how and why it works, from early ham operators to today's modern gadgetry. Within the limits of their equipment, the young students are able to conduct their own classroom experimentation after learning of the experiments of scientists like Marconi some 120 years ago. Parents are welcome to join the classroom in person or online at any time. A student on a faraway trip, in some cases to their homeland in Haiti, Jamaica, or other Caribbean islands, may enter the classroom via online video conferencing software. I was able to observe that the enthusiastic students also learned about solid career alternatives for their futures. Wirelessly, Mr. Pauly's classes have been able to do some cool things with their cameras and computers and to share their handiwork with friends and relatives globally via digital technology. The students have been translating their projects into other languages to share with children in different countries. They've now added Afghanistan and the International Space Station to the areas they may contact. Robert Pauly has a website at his own expense that features a program he created called The Classroom of Tomorrow. It enables the students to access their lessons online, to perform their digitized assignments and to save them into a password-protected file accessible from any computer by the student, the parents, or, of course, the teacher. Mr. Pauly has written hundreds of lesson plans he shares with teachers of any school, countrywide, statewide, and beyond, with a program called the SMART, S-M-A-R-T. That's for Science, Math, and Reading Technology Ambassador Training Program that he and his colleagues have developed. Although Bob Pauly hasn't gotten his SAM license yet, be assured it is on his to-do list. He and a principal have invited me back to do a radio demonstration at a future assembly program. I will be working with that school to help expand the already great technology program to include a full amateur radio station. Mr. Pauly teaches other colleagues that wireless technology is at the core of today's digital innovation, reminiscent of the early days of radio. Since, as all teachers already know, the ability to teach innovatively is often proportional to the supplies and equipment available in the classroom, coupled with the promise of introducing the amateur radio curriculum, a decision was made to make the technology program at Lantana Community Middle School the recipient of the RCA Education Committee's first monetary award to a school. The $500 has already bought much-needed supplies and equipment, enabling Mr. Pauly to offer some new and exciting projects to the children. Robert Pauly and I have been exchanging radio curriculum and lesson plans. I recently sent him a Morse code disc, which the students are having fun with. The message I would like to be taken away from this is, by your volunteering to go into a local school and doing a radio demonstration or volunteering to help set up a technology class, you can be responsible for introducing or enhancing a radio slant technology program in a high school or middle school. Introducing youngsters to the excitement of technology through the fun of ham radio class is an asset to any school. Hopefully, we will be able to get many more schools like this one on board to help in making education be a fun, positive experience for every child. For more information about Mr. Pauly and his program, you can contact him at lowercase P-A-U-L-E-Y at Palm Beach, that's one word, at P-A-L-M-B-E-A-C-H dot K12FL dot U-S. Again, that's Pauly at Palm Beach dot K12.FL dot U-S. For more information on how you can join the efforts of the RCA Education Committee in setting up radio technology programs in grade 12 and below in your local schools, contact me at my call sign WB2MGP at ix.netcom. I'll repeat that again. Carol Perry's email address is her call sign. WB2MGP at ix.netcom.com. I come across now an interesting article submitted by the Quarter Century Wireless Association, better known as the QCWA. It's titled Putting the Show on the Road or Low Water. The author here is Dave Hayes, Victor Echo 3, Juliet X-ray, VE3JX, that's a Canadian call sign. There's a quotation to begin with. Birds of a feather flock together. And that's the quotation. As far as QCWA is concerned, it is very apt. The strength of QCWA lies in the many local chapters and HIP meetings and regular get-togethers. Our members, who started in amateur radio at least 25 years ago, hence the quarter-century aspect, enjoy the association of like-minded and like-experienced friends. The feeling is not just a local one. Annually, the Quarter Century Wireless Association has held international conventions. The first years of our association, from 1948 to 1971, saw semi-annual conventions held in the New York City area. In 1972, a change occurred that would become the standard from then on. U.S. Senator Barry Goldwater. His amateur call is K7UGA, although Barry is now a silent key, became the Quarter Century Wireless Association's fourth president and was the motivating force behind putting the show on the road. That year saw the International Convention held in Washington, D.C. In 1973, it was held in Scottsdale, Arizona, and from that time on, the QCWA International Convention has been held annually and in different cities throughout North America. Some cities have been repeat venues, such as the previously mentioned New York City. Then there's Orlando, holding the event in 1974, 1980, and 2002. Scottsdale, which held the second non-New York City convention in 1973, put on a repeat performance in 1992. Ottawa, Ontario, Canada has held two conventions, 1996 and 2004. In fact, the 1996 event was the first international convention held outside the United States. The Canadian QCWA chapters have hosted four internationals, the two in Ottawa plus the 2000 in Toronto, Ontario, and the 2006 in Calgary, Alberta. Well done. And with the revival of the Vancouver, British Columbia Dogwood Chapter 98, we might see a future one in that city. There have also been three convention cruises. The first was a Caribbean cruise in 2001, with a repeat in 2009. The third was an Alaskan cruise in 2005. These week-long events allowed for a more relaxed seminar schedule, with some serious sightseeing, together with some association with amateurs living in ports of call. For example, in St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, the local ham club welcomed those on the cruise. In 2009, they had their table set up right across from where the ship docked. That's pretty cool. The cruise has also had two or three Marine Mobile HF stations on board at the disposal of the QCWA cruisers, courtesy of ICOM America. What is a QCWA International Convention like? The normal land-based convention is generally 3 to 4 days long. We can take a look at the last one held in Virginia Beach in 2008 as an example of what goes on. Thursday is when most would arrive at the designated hotel and then be greeted by the welcome crew of the local host chapter. In this case, it was Tidewater Chapter 119. In fact, I believe there were welcoming volunteers at the local airport with a pre-arranged chartered bus to take them to the convention site. Traditionally, the annual board of directors meeting is held on that day, so board members and their spouses would have arrived either on Wednesday or early Thursday morning. Usually there is a meet and greet informal reception on the evening of arrival, with a grand buffet scheduled for Friday or Saturday evening. Sometimes the meet and greet is arranged in conjunction with an informal luncheon, supper, or just cocktails. Virginia Beach allowed ample opportunity to get to know one another, perhaps making or maintaining friendships that will last for a lifetime. At any convention, the forums are a big attraction, and there was always something of interest for everyone. It proved to be a thoroughly enjoyable educational experience shared by those attending, and no one was bored. After the convention, appreciation was expressed by several of its attendees in public emails. Now, the article goes on, there is no QCWA International Convention scheduled for this year, 2010, an unfortunate break in an annual tradition that has existed since the inception of our association. There has been much discussion, study, and exploration of alternatives to the standard convention format. One option being tried this year is to hold the annual meetings for both members and board of directors in conjunction with the Dayton Hamvention, and that's going to be in a couple of weeks in May. The QCWA website at www.qcwa.org has the times and locations of these meetings at Dayton. For 2011, there will be a return to the traditional standalone format for the QCWA International Convention to be held in Warwick, Rhode Island on September 8 through 11. Now, according to this, that's not this year, but 2011. So what about becoming a QCWA member? If you were licensed 25 years ago as a radio amateur and are currently licensed, why not join QCWA and have the time of your life? Applications are available online at http://www.qcwa.org. Among many other things, you will enjoy our QCWA International Conventions with the proud, the elite, and the many. We welcome any questions or comments you may have. You can send them to VE3JX@BELL.net. That's a call sign, a Canadian call sign. VE3JX@BELL.net. It's time to take a look now at rules and regulations regarding amateur radio. This one is titled Everybody into the 2010 Element 2 Pool. Hi. The author here is John B. Johnston, called W3BE. Our volunteer examiner committees have made major improvements with their 2010 Element 2 pool, containing 396 questions. It goes into effect July 1 of this year, 2010. More comprehensive than the 2006 version, it should benefit our community by enabling our volunteer examiners to assure that all newly licensed amateur operators are ready for the privileges authorized to a technician class operator. Every FCC licensed and reciprocal alien amateur operator should also carefully review the questions to assure themselves they are still fully qualified to properly carry out their duties. The pool can be downloaded at www.ncvec.org/. Element 2 is the first rung in our three operator class ladder. Section 97.507 requires that Element 2 written question set must be prepared by a volunteer examiner using questions taken from this pool. The purpose of a pool is to provide uniformity in the examination questions, regardless of where they are administered. A pool should address key matters that enable RVEs to determine if an examinee does or does not possess the operational and technical qualifications required to perform properly the duties of an amateur service licensee. It is not intended to be the all-inclusive learning tool. First and foremost, a working knowledge of the pertinent FCC rules is fundamental to operating an amateur station properly. Also required is an understanding of our good amateur and good engineering practices, along with a grasp of the related technical rudiments sufficient to make those rules and practices meaningful. Missing from the new pool, however, are questions on the meanings of certain basic technical terms necessary to understand the applicable rules. Amateur operators must comply with these rules in order to perform their duties properly. There's also a discomforting emphasis on manners minutiae at the expense of the essential. Knowing what the term PEP, that's absent, and ERP, that's absent, as used in the FCC rules mean, for instance, is considerably more important to performing properly the duties of an amateur service licensee than simply knowing that a special event station call sign has a single letter for both the prefix and the suffix, or that contesting involves contacting as many stations as possible during a specific period of time. Your first step toward gaining access to some extremely valuable radio spectrum by becoming an FCC-licensed amateur operator is to pass a question set prepared and administered by a volunteer examiner team. It will consist of 35 written questions taken from the Element 2 question pool that begins July 1. It will be prepared by uncompensated volunteer examiners and administered by a volunteer examiner team. Although you can miss up to 9 correct answers and still pass, you will actually need to know more. Do not waste RVE's time. Prepare yourself carefully for your examination session. Join a training class and study a training manual. Use the pool only to check on your progress. To simply memorize enough correct answers from the pool to squeak by the examination is to shortchange yourself of the opportunity to gain important knowledge that will enhance your ability to earn the respect of our amateur service community and become a more valuable asset to our country. Become familiar with the FCC rules for our amateur radio service. They can be downloaded from the Government Post Office website. That's accessible through www.w3beinformed.org. And sort of spoken out, that's w3beinformed.org. If your immediate interest is emergency communications, please read Be Informed number 44. Be certain to thank your examiners for volunteering their time and effort for you. And incidentally, good luck. I think we'll finish up today with MCOM, that's Emergency Communications, and you, making sure you're ready for the protracted scenario. The author here is Jerry Wellman, called W7SAR. The first public service event I was heavily involved with was a search for a 9-year-old boy missing from a church picnic on a central Wyoming mountain back in 1971. Participants included hikers, scouts, community volunteers, Civil Air Patrol, CB, and amateur radio operators, the military, and some out-of-state search and rescue, that's SAR teams. But I most recall from that event was that the days just ran together. After a week, we were tired, cranky, dirty, and not optimistic. The boy was found alive after 11 days, and that was a miracle. I recall during the search making dozens of trips up and down the mountain to get equipment or find specific items to replace something we broke or to get something we decided would make our involvement more effective. In those days, there was little by way of formal guidance for public safety volunteers. We just made it up as we moved forward. The event was the first of many I would call protracted scenarios that often lasted for several days or even 1 or 2 weeks. It was common for us to have ready packs with sleeping bags, clothing, and food in our cars because the norm was a multi-day event. Public service has evolved. Today's events are seldom more than one day and often last only a few hours. They happen quickly and they get resolved quickly. Recently, a Coast Guard helicopter crashed in Utah near Wolf Creek Pass. It's pretty rugged terrain and there was heavy snow. Similar events from even 10 years ago would have been a day or two rescue and survivors would not be anticipated. The search near Wolf Creek Pass lasted all of 1 or 2 hours, and all 5 crew members survived. When the first call came, it was in response to satellite beacons that indicated an emergency and gave the GPS coordinates. Crew members from the downed chopper also used text messaging to alert others. Literally within minutes, the sheriff's SAR team was responding and rescue choppers were airborne. It was over within hours in very rugged terrain. In recent history, survivors of a private plane crash used a SPOT, that's SPOT, personal rescue device, to alert rescuers. It gave GPS coordinates, and within minutes, a rescue was underway. What's the message for today's volunteers? First, I'd never leave home without a SPOT device. It is worth the cost and can trigger a response if you find yourself in need of rescue. Second, responders need to be ready to go quickly and prepared to stand down within hours. But here's the message we're not focusing on. Be ready for the protracted event. While many, if not most, events will be of short duration, it is now the week-long scenario that deserves our attention. Many of us are not prepared if the event we're supporting doesn't end within a day. We don't carry overnight gear or have plans for food or water. I've had volunteers tell me there is no need to carry extra radio batteries because the full charge on their walkie-talkie is more than adequate. In discussing ready gear with others, the tendency is to focus on the quick and simply ignore the possibility that an overnight or multi-day event will happen. for the most part, focusing on the hour-long response serves our needs very well, as few can point to long events happening in recent memory. Once in a while, someone will mention a hurricane or earthquake or even a hazmat evacuation, but most of our need is short-term. Do I have answers? No. I have my gear at home for a long-term event, but seldom do I carry it in my vehicle. I admit complacency. When my alert pager sounds, I don't usually think of grabbing the several duffel bags of long-term supplies. On a SAR event some years ago, I left on what I thought was a routine event to track an emergency beacon, and after a full day and 200 miles of travel, I wished I'd taken my gear. But that's an event that, in today's world, is an anomaly. The topic is worthy of discussion in your next gathering. There are always some people who will argue the need to carry more, and some who will argue the need is pointless. Aside from offering you any guidance, I would simply argue we should not ignore the possibility of a protracted event and prepare accordingly. My good friend Mike Renlund, KC7IID, showed me a very nice ID holder in the form of an armband. I've ordered one. It's made by Chisco, and the cost plus shipping was under $10. The holder is robust enough to carry a lot of cards, and Mike has even attached a small LED light for convenience. It's a good idea. What prompted Mike's purchase was an airport ID required for ramp access. Usually, you would just clip it to your pocket or a lanyard, but Mike pointed out that clipped things should not fall off around aircraft. He's right. The holder he recommended is secure enough to stay on your arm and is adjustable for wear with or without a heavy coat. The cards are secure and won't fall out of the holder. You can use it for any purpose and be assured your cards won't blow away, fall off, or get snagged and be lost. Another KC7IID idea is the Kindle, that digital device sold by Amazon designed for electronic books. Mike has uploaded his with various emergency response documents he would need during an event. Anything in a .pdf format can be put on the Kindle, including certificates he's earned to show his qualifications. That's a nice idea. The Kindle is a little on the expensive side, but would be a great benefit to anyone in a response role, especially those with supervisory responsibilities. You could even put your World Radio Online editions on your Kindle. Think of that. Maybe even this recording. Ha ha. Mike reports that various maps and other ICS documents are easily stored and viewed, and that the battery is good for more than a week. As you consider the amount of reference material available, having it all on one easy-to-read device makes a lot of sense. The display is easy to read and is black and white. There's no color in this gadget, which may make maps not as easy to use, but that's the only downside for an emergency response application. And those comments all came from Jerry Wellman, W7SAR, in his featured column, MCOM and You. Well, folks, this just about brings me up to time for this month's reading of World Radio Online for May 2010. World Radio is published by CQ Communications. They're located at 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hems may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyhem, that's lowercase one word, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M. It's handyhem@courage.org. The website, a very fine one indeed, www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot, N1BLF. My location, geographic location, Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right near Buzzards Bay and good old Cape Cod. Thanks a lot for checking in. Hope to talk to you again next month here on the Courage Handyham System. I hope all of you are well and that you enjoy your late springtime and perhaps look forward to a lot better summer weather than we've had throughout the United States, not only this spring, but all the rain and then the cold again and pretty rough winter as well. 73. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye-bye.